Welcome to the Franziska Show podcast on JewishCoffeeHouse.com, the show where I give a voice to Jewish issues, topics, and people. I'm Franziska Brady, your host.
Shira Nevenzel Meyuchas.
Welcome to the Franziska Show. This is our second time around. If you've been following me on social media, you probably saw me post once that I did a whole episode with someone super special and amazing. And then 40 minutes in, I realized I wasn't recording. So this is our take two. Welcome back, Shira.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, your religious background and your professional background.
I grew up in Dolev. It's a small settlement next to Modi'in in Israel. And I come from a Zionist religious family. I got married at 19. My husband was still in the yeshiva, and then he became a teacher, and we moved to the south after a few years in Modi'in, and we've been there for 4 years now, except this year we haven't quite lived in Sderot, but let's say it's 4 years. We have two kids. One is going to be 6 soon, as one is going to be 3 soon, 2 boys. And professionally, I come from administration world and project managing. And the past year, I became a freelance and I do project managing and content writing, strategy and marketing for nonprofits and other companies in high tech. So it's very interesting. I think the most relevant project that I'm doing now for our podcast is in Sderot. It's the International Resilience Center, which is a center that was started last year, like a year or something ago, with the understanding that Sderot has something that they know. We know how to deal with crisis. We know how to deal with ongoing trauma. We know how to deal with ongoing emergency. And we still have a beautiful city that is growing all the time. We decided to take this knowledge and the models that were developed in Sderot and to teach them out, to share that knowledge with the world. So we work with communities and leaders and organizations all over the world to see what they need. What is the thing that they are dealing with? And we can share the same models to help them deal with that. Because not everybody is dealing with rockets, but it can be even like nature, you know, hurricanes. But there are things that are your emergency, but the models and like what we say, the Torah of Sderot, can be helpful to other communities as well. So I work there now.
Okay. And I'm excited to get into that. But first, I'd like to go into your personal story. And maybe since our last recording, maybe you moved back home, or that's not yet. Okay. So take us through your experiences from Simchat Torah till today.
Baruch Hashem, we're not home for Simchat Torah, which is a big blessing for us personally. We went to my in-laws for Chag. As a normal Chag, you know, you just go to your in-laws. Shabbat morning, my husband was called to reserve and he was there ever since. He didn't finish yet. I found myself with two kids and, you know, after a few hours trying to figure out, what am I doing? You know, where am I going? I had barely anything with me. You know, when you pack for Shabbat, you bring like 2 Shabbat dresses and whatever it is you're wearing, you don't have like clothes for 5 months. So on Motzei Shabbat, I started to think like, what's my plan? And we went a little bit around Israel. We toured. We had like a road trip, the kids and I, and we went from family to friends to hotels. And after 2.5 weeks, a friend reached out and he said that he's not home. They are not home, the family, and I can come stay there in Jerusalem. So that's what we did. And I took my kids into kindergartens in Jerusalem so they can have stability and something normal in their life. And we moved 3 apartments ever since. But we're still in Jerusalem. We're still trying to keep the stability for my kids. I think this is part of what we were thinking from the beginning, like 7:30 on Shabbat, when my husband was called up and he had to run to the south. He was starting like to get organized, you know, and you stuff things into a backpack and he started to run around. And I was like, listen, we can choose now what the kids will feel. Because they're not in Sdowat. Like, they're not under a rocket attack. They're safe. But sometimes the tense and the stress of getting ready in emergency can be their trauma. So I said, okay, this is, you're going to get ready slowly. And he did. It wasn't easy for him because, of course, he wanted to get as fast as possible. But I'm like, okay, you're going to get ready slowly. And he said goodbye to each kid, give a kiss. We explained. We didn't lie. We said the truth we wanted to say, but we didn't lie. And we said that there are rockets in Sderot and Abba needs to go now to help in the army. And he'll be back soon when we can. And Sderot is not really safe now, but we want to give the army the chance to do their job. So we're not going to go back for a while. And then he drove really fast down south. But those minutes were, I think, where we decided for the first time that we're going to be in charge of our story. We're not going to be just going in and whatever happens, we're going to take charge of our own story, our family story. I think what leads me all the time in decision is like the day after. What's going to happen at 6 after the war? Who are we going to be as a couple, as a family, as parents, the children? How our mental health will be, the relationships we built, our faith in God, like who are we going to be the day after? And that was like really something I had in front of my eyes for a long time. And even now. And now a lot of people went back to Sdowat and we haven't gone yet, which is complicated, obviously.
How come others went back and you didn't?
Well, you can go back. You know, you can do a lot of things. Doesn't mean that that's the right thing to do for our family. And we're not judging anybody. Like every family had to make a really tough decision. I do think that we're very grateful that we have the opportunity to choose. There are families that can choose now that they don't have a house to come back to. And we, Baruch Hashem, have the choice. They opened back the schools in Sderot. So, you know, you have the supermarket open, you have school open, like life is going back, which is very special after the city was evacuated and pretty much empty for a few days or even a few weeks. But for us, I feel like the stability that we have here is something that I wouldn't want to mess up yet. And I'm still alone, you know, it's me. So I need to be in a place that I feel like I can deal with everything. And for now, it feels like, right, I do go back to Sdowat all the time. I was in Sdowat today. I met with a Taglit group, which I do quite a bit. So I go back to work.
What's a Taglit group?
Well, what's the word for it in English? Like the students that come.
Birthright.
Yeah. It's called Taglit in Hebrew. So I meet with groups all the time that come and want to learn about Sdowat. And I try to give the resilience prisma of the story and not only like the oyvei prisma, you know.
What does your husband do in the army? Are you allowed to say you're not allowed to say? I think last time you said you can't tell us.
Yeah, I can't say.
So I needed this back on record. I loved how you shared that story using your professional experience in this, the Torah, the model you've built around living under fire and making that moment a very calm moment for the children to remember. Instead of it being screaming and quick, it was maybe intentionally slowed down and more serious to intentionally create those moments. Life-changing. Okay, so talk to me a little bit about those first few weeks and just in general what it's like to be on one hand, and I want you to go into both. Don't skip around. You are a displaced family and you're also a family that doesn't have the father around for so many months.
They sell like we're double trouble, you know.
Double
you
trouble.
Have both. I think the most difficult part was I had to make all the decisions on my own because he was not here to make those decisions with me. So I would like just update him. Oh, we're now at your sister's house up north. Oh, we're now doing Shabbat and Mitzvah. Like I would just update him because I couldn't like consult with him. So that was something. And of course, for the kids, like everything at once changed. Like they don't go back to their house. They don't really have a home now. We try to create that, but it's not their house. We have the father going away. Like each thing on its own is a lot. thank God he's not in Gaza, so we didn't have like the life threat. But still, like he's not here, and it's a lot. You know, like will he come? Will he not come? I just had to create, thanks to a lot of good people and of course God, a lot of help resources. I said that I'm doing fundraising for my own, but not with money, but like with resources and help and, you know, getting the things that I need help with, which is not easy because, you know, I like to be this independent person that is okay and is dealing on my own, but I understood that to get through this for the long run, because this is not like a short operation we used to have in Sdela, like a few days and you're back on track. No, I knew, I had this feeling that this will take time. And to get through this for the long run, I had to get help. I had to get to know people, to create myself, you know.
A new network.
Exactly. A network of good people. And what was pretty special about this, that people gave what they were good at. Not everybody needs to bake cookies for the soldiers. It's amazing. But that's not everybody's thing to do. Some people can do other stuff. And we got invited for Shabbat meals. And we had a friend that helped us with clothes. And we had someone to help us to find a kindergarten that will take my kids in. And a person that helped me to get coats. Like, every person had their network, so it goes around, you know, and to help in specific. And we had amazing, amazing help and amazing people that we met here. And we're so grateful for that. Like, I don't know how you can do this alone. And people would ask me, how are you dealing alone? And I'm like, I'm not alone. It's right. Like, I go to sleep alone and then I get two kids in the middle of the night. They somehow come here. But I don't feel alone because I feel so many people caring for me and asking, how am I? And I have my family that is super supportive. Our families that they came in and helped. It's like a small story, but like I had a Shabbat that I was like feeling really bad. And a friend that is not married came over. She slept with me and she woke up with the kids Shabbat morning. And I slept like till noon, which is so special. I was like so grateful. I would never ask for that, but that was like exactly what I needed. Cause you know, you can't be sick when you're in general, moms can't be sick. And now even more, but I was like out and she came and she did that for me. And there are plenty more stories of people just like thinking, you know, even things that I didn't even know I needed. This neighbor came and she's like, do you guys have winter clothes? Because when we came, it was summer. And I'm like, yeah, the kids are good. I have coats for the kids. I have boots. She's like, no, you, do you have winter clothes? And I'm like, oh, I'm denying winter. So she came the day after with a bag of clothes and a winter coat that I use all the time. Because she was smart enough not to believe me and to see what I needed that I wasn't like even able to understand. There's nothing like Am Yisrael, seriously. Like, people are so good all over.
Is it hard to accept help and gifts? Or not gifts, necessities.
The first Shabbat after Simchat Torah, I went with the kids to Mitzpe Ramon. We stayed in a small motel there. Amazing people. And we went with other friends from Sderot, which was very special for the kids, like to meet friends. There was this place there that they gathered like clothes, like donations, and it's Ramon to this place, and they kind of arranged it as if it's a store. Well, it was not a store, like for sure, but they tried to make it like, you know, with signs of like what sizes everything, and they had like a marketplace with like toothpaste and stuff like that, and they had and diapers, clothes, and they had shoes, toys, like everything. It was like a building with a few floors, and I took the kids there because we got there and it was freezing. And I was like, oh my God, we need coats. Like, we need sweaters, something. I had nothing. They were like with sandals and short pants. And I'm like, okay, we're going to have to go. And we needed toothpaste and we needed shampoos, stuff that I didn't realize that we need. And there aren't many stores in Mitzpe Ramon, so that was a good solution. And I told my son that this is a store. I couldn't deal with the fact that I'm getting help, that we're being donated to, like people are donating for us. We're okay. We have tons of clothes in our closet. I know exactly where, you know. And he looked around and he saw these Spider-Man shoes that had lights and like really cool shoes. And he's like, is this okay that we buy this also? And I'm like, you know what? You can buy this also. Like, we didn't pay for anything, of course. Like, it was all good people. And I was sitting there in the toy store, not really store, but in the toys area. The kids played, like it was kind of like a play zone. And I just started tearing. I was like crying silently, like, what is going on? How am I here in this position that there were volunteers playing with my kids? And I'm like, you know, it's not easy, but you know, there is the saying, may you always be the giver, which is not a right saying, because life is not like that. Sometimes you're the giver and sometimes you're the receiver. That's life. We're all up and down. It's not even up and down, but it's like what I'm missing. Because while I was getting clothes, a few days before, I was helping people from my community to escape Aros Derot with volunteer drivers that came in. So I can't say that I was like down. I was helping with what I could help, and I got help with things I didn't have. It wasn't easy, but it took time to adjust and to understand what is the help I need, who I want to get it from. Not every person I felt comfortable getting help from, to be okay with it.
Can you give me an example of that?
There are people that do things to feel good with themselves, you know, and that's fine. You can also feel good, but that's not the goal of giving. And I got these, you know, feelings from people that are like really looking at me from above and like, oh, I'm going to take care of you. And that's not something I felt comfortable with. It's okay if we're in a relationship. Like a neighbor here, she brought me cookies one Shabbat, and another Shabbat, I brought her cookies for Shabbat because we're in a relationship. We're not in a position where you're in charge of me. So I had to make some adjustments and to get the help that I felt comfortable getting.
And I know there's so much we talked about. Well, hopefully we'll get to it, but I really want to go into the topic specifically. Why you were suggested for the podcast was because of the work you do with Insderot, with the living within trauma and still thriving, being prosperous in other ways or in all the ways, despite the physical location and everything comes with. There's strength and resilience that comes from it. So can you talk to us about some of the key factors that are involved and then share what you did to help your community and I'm sure people from other communities during this time?
First of all, let's talk about the word resilience, which is the buzzword of the year, I think. What does it mean? So resilience, like the definition, is the ability to bounce back from hard things. You're coping, you're dealing, and you're okay. You're bouncing back to life. Things happen, but you're back on track. Maybe not perfect, but you're getting yourself together. One of the things that you mentioned is the subject of community. There are a few things that we see as tools in resilience building that we use as a city and also in our specific community. So let's say one of the things that the city use, and I'll talk a little bit about the city and then I'll go into our community, is trust. We built trust between the people and the leadership. People trust the mayor. People trust people from the city hall. People have trust because they know that they will get information, because they know that nobody's hiding anything from them, because they know that the people really care for them. Before even the mayor said things out to the press, he would say things to the citizens. It was so important that we talk inside and not only go out and say big things on TV. We want to have this relationship with our citizen that builds this trust. And when you have the infrastructure of trust before October 7, we could get everything done better ever since. We had to evacuate all the city, which is a lot. You know, it's like 36,000 people that had to be evacuated. Well, there were 2,000 that didn't want to leave, really, in the first few days. But it's still a lot, you know, 34. And how can you do that? How can you say to people, listen, pack up and go, if you don't have the base of trust, that people know that you're doing the best for them, that you're fighting for them? So this is one of the things that when you have trust in leadership, you have more resilience. Another thing is community. Community as a tool of resilience. You have the feeling that someone sees you. You have meaning. And of course, a mission. If you're on a mission that protects you, if you're doing something meaningful for others, you care for others, that in some way also keeps your soul in a good mental health condition. And for me, I was busy. October 7, I was working on Shabbat for the Resilience Center. I was working all the days after that. I had to do things for the community, things for work, things for my kids even. I had something to do, something meaningful to do. That helps us bounce back because you don't have the privilege of not. You have to deal. You have to be in some condition. I had a talk the other day with this group that came and I'm like, everybody here is functioning or you weren't here. So it doesn't mean it's not hard. It doesn't mean that we're not sad. It doesn't mean we don't care. We care. We're sad. It's hard. But we're back in reality. We're working. We're doing. We're providing. We're having, you know, life. And this is also something that if you're able to sit with being sad, in pain, and also to be happy and to have normal life. This is also part of resilience, the ability to have them both at the same time. It doesn't mean that we don't care. If we're having a wedding, it's not because we don't care about the hostage. Of course we do, but we're still having a wedding. And we're sitting with both of the feelings all the time. So I'll go a little bit into our community. It's a shul community. It has about 120 families. I'm not sure. It depends how you count. But this is, we also had a lot of community building work before October 7, which helped to keep the community going, even remotely, when we had people from Eilat to Ramat Golan. People were evacuated all over Israel. One of the things that I think it's a little bit the decision that we made for our family, like the day after, also in community. The day after, people will go back to Sderot. Why? Because they have something there. And now the community exists. We did not lose the community during these 5 months. Of course, we have much more work to do and not everything perfect, but we have something that kept people in the loop, being part of something, feeling meaningful and feeling trust in the rabbi and his wife. And like, if we're talking about leadership and having the feeling that someone sees you and cares for you. And these things help when you're coming back to a not normal situation of still having rocket attacks, but you're part of something that is bigger than you. We did not want to come back and realize that there's nothing. So we worked the whole time. And the first thing we did, of course, is like just to make sure that everybody's alive. I'm sorry to say it like that, but we had to see where people are.
Well, how did you do that? People were going, calling?
So we were texting people, and if someone didn't answer and in this average of time, we sent someone over, which was crazy because there were still terrorists in the city, but we just wanted to know what's the situation. The first few days, people came to us. It's not only me. I'm part of a leadership. It's not just me. People came to us and said that they need to get out, but they don't have a car. Or maybe the husband took the car because he was called up to the army, or they have more kids than seats in the car. And we had volunteers coming out of Sderot, which is crazy, with their own weapons and just taking families out. Nobody asked, you know, called them up. They're like, are there more families? Like, we can come. And we had people coming from Tel Aviv and Chulon and from the settlements next to Be'er Sheva, like all over Israel, people came to just rescue. And we had a few dozens of people that we were able to get out like that. And then we did the first assessment.
Where did they go?
So it depends. Like there were families that had to go, you know, people went to their families, to friends, to an apartment, to wherever, to hotel. People just left. But, you know, you can think more clear when you're not scared to death. So they would take them out and then people would try to figure out what their next step is. Not everybody knew where they were going, which is also crazy to go back to those moments and to understand that people didn't even know where they're going to go, but they understood that they had to leave. And we did this first assessment to see where people are. What do people need? Who is in reserves? Who's where? Who's what? Just where are we? Because we're not in the same neighborhood anymore. We're all around Israel. And the rabbi and his wife went around to places that we had a few families together, not even together, but like in the same area. And they would meet with families and listen and try to give them strength and to remind them of what they have. Part of resilience to remind ourselves what we can do. People that left Sderot are not poor people that we should say, oh no. We should look at these people and say, these are people that functioned amazingly under fire. They had to take their kids under fire from the air, from the streets. There was fire everywhere, and to take them out. This is really high standards of functioning, you know? And it's sometimes we look at people and we say, oh, poor kid, like what he went through. But this kid is happy and he's playing and he's good because he can, you know, and he's not a poor kid. Yes, he had to deal with things that are like unbelievable, but he's functioning and he's happy and he has friends and he's playing with his Lego and he's building the Iron Dome. But it's okay. This is his way to express himself. Like, we're not afraid of that. So going back to the community, we had ladies' nights and we had Zoom meetings and we had a Hanukkah party and we had a Shabbat together. We did all these events in different places in Israel so we can see the people, meet, remind ourselves that we're part of something. Now that people are coming back, we had another assessment before people were returning to see who's going back, who's not, where people are, how people are feeling. The rabbi and his wife went around and met with people to feel them, to see what they need, how we can make this easier for people to go back. We had this Shabbat ladies kiddush in the Rebbetzin's house, and she had a shiur for family, and 30 women came. That's a lot. It's a war out there, and people came. We're already planning our Purim party. It's not really already because it's next week, but for us, it's already, trying to plan how we're still going to have our regular events, how we can bring back the stability for the community. So being part of a community is something that really helps you go through things because you're not the only one that went through them. You're part of people, a group that went through kind of the same things. Every family had their own experience, but in general, we went through something together, which is also powerful.
It's so valuable to gain that perspective and to hear it. And I'm sure everyone listening, anyone who isn't evacuated and anyone who's just in their routine life can relate to certain things that you've said because everyone's managing that tension. As a mother, you can always have to channel your resilience, you know, and you can't be sick, you can't be tired. You describing sleeping until noon, I was thinking I can also use that one day. But I'd love to hear you talk more about your children and their experience and what your role as a mother is, because you're dealing with it on a communal level, on an individual level, but you're also trying to intentionally create an experience as a mother for your children through this time. Because they'll never be, you know, 6 and 3 again. This is a year that they can grow from and you want to capitalize on what you can.
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for this question. Because it's not something that you always think about, but it's like interesting now to look back and see. I think I told my husband like 2 weeks after everything started that if our kids in like, I don't know, 15 years will say, wow, we didn't know that the world was so terrible. We didn't know that there were so many hostages. We didn't know that there were so many killed soldiers. Like, they would be surprised by the war and they would be like, oh, but we remember it as a good time. Then I did my job. Because at those ages, they don't need to know everything. They know, of course, they know some of the things. They're not at home, so they know. But, you know, what exactly they know? And that was like my first goal, for them to remember this period in life not so traumatizing. And, you know, he said, I'll go the other way. We always say that the kid in Sderot knows the best how to deal with rockets because, you know, you're born into this. And if we're going to be sitting in a room in New York with really important people, like if there's a rocket like coming, he would be the best one to know what to do more than all the important people because he's regular. So we had a siren in Jerusalem, like in the beginning of the war. And in Jerusalem, you have a minute and a half to get to the shelter. In Sderot, you have 7 seconds. We just went so slowly into the sheltered room because it's like a minute and a half, like a ton of time. And we're going in and I'm bringing water and I'm bringing toys and it's still going, like nothing happened yet. And we're like, come on, guys, like we're tired. We have to get to go on with our schedule. Like we don't have time to wait for the rocket to hit. The day after, he went into his classroom, like in kindergarten, and he became the expert. My child, he became the expert of rockets. He asked the kids, like, where were you when you heard the siren? How did you feel? Were you afraid? Were you scared? And he explained to everybody how the Iron Dome works. He was like, yeah, you know, a missile comes from here and then we meet it up here. You know, like he would explain everything. And he told them, you know, you can do breathing methods in the shelter. Like he became the expert. So for him, we tried to make this not a scary situation, which of course it was. It's not fun when someone tries to kill you, but we tried to make it also empowering. You have something to share. You have a knowledge that kids in Jerusalem don't have, or some of them don't have. So you're special, you know? He always gives us like the feedback, like, thank God I have kids that talk so I can know what they're feeling. And a few weeks ago, I was like, okay, you know what? We're in really good shape. We have a routine. We have stability. We're good. I was really proud of myself. And then we went on a small vacation with my husband's family. And we're in this room, you know, with a jacuzzi in the middle of the room and up north. It's nobody's house, of course. It's like a resort. But he's asking me, what's the name of the family that owns this house that is allowing us to live there? And there are so many things behind that question. It's not an okay question to ask. It's not a normal question. He is regular that every family, I'm like, okay, this is Samuel's family house. We're saying thank you. Say hi to the camera because I'm taking a picture to show them that we're enjoying their house. And this is the Schloss's house from Atlanta. And we're saying thank you to them. And I'm going to send them, you know, get them a gift. And this is the Schwartz's from Manhattan. And we don't know how they look because they don't have pictures in their house. But we're so grateful. Like every place we would create this, you know, being grateful atmosphere in our house that people allowed us to live in their apartments. And so for him, he was sure that this resort was also a nice family from somewhere that is allowing us to live there. And for me, it was like, you know, a bit of a slap because I understood that even though there is stability, there is normal, it's not because the kid is not in his home and we're just thankful for all the good people, but it's not our home.
I can't believe I'm speaking to someone who is just, first of all, smiling and saying, finding something positive from every single thing that could totally tear someone apart. No, it's inspiring and we need to channel some of your, I need to channel some of your energy.
I want to say that it's not like this all the time, of course. Like I do have my melting down parts and I do have my watching friends eating ice cream moments. Well, I try to keep this positive thinking because it's like surviving. I can't go into this like black hole because I don't have the privilege to do that. I'm a mother of two alone. I need to keep it together. We'll cry. Like we do cry. I had this meeting last week, a professional meeting, and I just cried from nothing, which was very not professional of me, but life is overwhelming. But even though there is so many good things, so many, I call it like chesed that Hashem gave us in this situation of, you know, meeting good people, being in a nice apartment, having good teachers for my kids. There's so many good things on the way, which helps dealing with everything. I think the first time I had like a really, really like black hole moment was when both of my kids went into gun school. I was alone for the first time, like really alone. And it was like, I don't know, 3 weeks after everything started. And then I realized how much I needed my kids. I even wrote something like a little bit cynical about it, but that I also use my kids as human shields because I could always say, oh, don't talk about that because the kids are listening and don't show me that movie because the kids are listening. But it was really also me saying, don't show me this. I'm listening. You know, I don't want to hear that. I need to choose what I'm bringing into my soul right now. And it's not that I'm ignoring the situation. I'm just choosing what I can deal with right now. I don't know. It's just like I was alone and it was like everything came at once, but we bounce back. That's life. And also choosing is a big thing in resilience. When you feel that you can choose, even if there are so many things you cannot choose, what the things you can choose help you bring back the control to your life. So we're trying to do that as well.
Would you consider staying where you are so your kids could stay in the same schools, or that's not an option? The moment it's the right time, you're going back to your home, to your community, to your people? Or are you open to the new people to be your people?
Everything is an option right now. You know, I can explain going back and staying, both of them, like really convincing, because all the options are there. Everything has their ups and downs. So we're trying to figure it out to see what's good for our kids, to our family in general. This is also overwhelming.
Yeah, making decisions, and you're doing that alone right now.
Yeah.
Many of them.
Well, this decision we're making together, but...
Well, you don't have to make it this minute either.
No, not.
Did you go back and did you take your kids and what was that like?
It took a few weeks before I went back. I went because I had to go for work. It wasn't easy for me. I went into the house and I felt like a stranger in my own home. It was crazy. And we still had the sukkah up and we had the Arbat Aminim still in the living room and the sitters of Sukkot, like, time stopped and we didn't. We went on, but time stopped. And it was like in your face to see that. It took me a few times before I could come, that I came, that every time was super overwhelming until I could come and it was like, okay. And I felt like it's okay. And then we brought the kids. A few weeks ago, we brought the kids. And in the beginning, my big one, he didn't want to go. He said, will there be rockets? And I'm like, maybe. I cannot promise you that there won't be. And he says, I don't want to go. We never lie to our kids, but I could tell him, like, I couldn't promise that there will be no rockets, but I could promise him that our army is doing everything to keep him safe. And the army is doing everything they can to make him feel comfortable coming home. And I also told him that in a lot of aspects, we are winning. We are getting a lot of things done in Gaza. So we're not losing, and that comforted him, and he felt more confident to come. And he knew that there could be. He was, you know, listening to every single noise outside, but they came home. They were so excited. They played with their toys. They looked around, like, to see if everything is still in place, and the refrigerator was empty, and they're like, there's nothing in the refrigerator. I'm like, yeah, well, we took everything out. And for them, it was still like summer. So my 3-year-old, he was like, I want my bathing suit and I want to go to the park with the water. There's like a water action park that we would go all summer there. And he's like, I want to go. And we're like, sweetheart, it's winter, you know, like it's raining. You're not going anywhere. But for them, like that's where they stopped. And that's where they started when we came for this visit. But we tried to make it like really fun. We had pizza. We did take them to the park to play. So we tried to make it like a good, and they showered at home and we took them home, you know, asleep. Did you hear what I just said? I said that they showered at home and then we took them home. Because that's what it is. We went from our home to our home.
You have two homes.
Just like understanding what I was saying. I was happy I took them, that we took them. Like my husband was with me when we took them. It wasn't easy for them. I think it did bring out some of the stress, but it was good.
It's all about getting back into those areas while it's still fresh to clear it before it becomes this box you can't touch and talk about right. or go into. Can you talk to me about your relationship with your husband and how your marriage has been affected? I'm sure it's not easy, if you're comfortable.
Okay. Well, we're going to be married soon for 8 years. And I think every couple has their ups and downs.
I'm not judging.
No, I'm sure. I'm saying like whoever's listening have their ups and downs. That's life. I do think that when you get into a stress zone, or you stress the boundaries of life, things get more intense. But what we try to do, even though I had to make the decisions alone, I try to keep him involved all the time. I didn't want him to become, I'm going to say like a harsh word, but like useless. That, okay, we're dealing good without you. I wanted to keep these strings, you know, that are attaching him to our day-to-day life, to see how we're still keeping him part of the family, even though he's not every day here and part of our routine. I feel now that for me, this was just to show me how, first of all, how lucky I am. I have a great husband, Baruch Hashem, and every time he comes, he's like full charge of the kids and he takes out the garbage and I'm just kidding. Like he's there for me. 100%, which is very special for me because he could have come back like tired and wanting to sleep, but he puts my needs before his, which is beautiful. And I do feel like that we have superpowers. We have the ability to face other challenges. And we had our challenges like in life before, but this is really an outstanding challenge. And I'm like, if we're going to go through this, we're going to conquer the world. We did have some rough times during the war, but like in general, I do feel like that I'm ready for the next step. That we're going to be okay. We're going to get through this and we're stronger together. Like for me, that to have a partner that shares this experience with me is something that I'm very grateful for.
Marriage wasn't designed to do long distance or on the weekends, every other weekend.
No, I always say there's a reason we're two. Like with the kids, I have these situations. I'm like, there's a reason we're two, usually. But we'll go back to being two soon. There's not the soon.
Any parting words for our audience today?
Well, first of all, I want to say that when we met, you did the Songs of Resilience show in Israel. It was beautiful. And I really felt like we connected. So I'm so happy that we had the chance to have this conversation. For me, every time, like now, I'm like, people are going to be tired of us, you know, us Miluim wives or us refugees, whatever. A few months after everything started and still thought of us, which is really beautiful, like to still see us after all this time. It brings me to something that I've been feeling like for a long time, that we here in Israel and you in America, but all the Jews like in Israel and diaspora, whatever, we're all part of the same story. We're all going through something together. We're not, it's not like Israel's problem. It's something that we're going through together. And if something happens to me in Sderot, I had friends texting me Motzei Shabbat and also Motzei second Yantif. It depends who's what. from all over the world, like from Australia and South Africa and Europe and America, like friends that I have through the years, like checking to see how am I doing. And I feel like I have the same care if someone, you were saying that you had flags on your houses and that someone took something off, or I don't remember exactly, like harm.
Yeah, one of them was, yeah, removed.
Yeah. Vandalism. And I felt like this is the same story, you know? My heart going out to that. So if we can grow as people, you know, like as a society, as Am Yisrael, from this, we're going to be in a pretty good place. Thank you so much for this.
Shira, thank you so much. And thank you for having the patience to do this again, and for not killing me the first time around.
It's okay. We said last time that this is resilience, right? Dealing with things. Exactly. Yes, dealing with having not recording everything. Well, this is recorded, right?
This is recorded. Yeah, I could benefit from your son's breathing techniques.
Thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please leave me a 5-star review. This is a Jewish Coffee House podcast, and I hope you have a better rest of your week. Speak to you next time.